LeBron James still has not made his decision. We are facing the indecision now. Tom Haverstraw and I talked all about the latest around LeBron James, the Warriors, Jonathan Kuminga, the Houston Rockets, and plus we answer some of your mailbag questions. If you want to submit a question for a future mailbag episode, email me at kocshow@yahoosports.com or leave a comment on YouTube or Spotify. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today to talk about all the latest this NBA offseason, Tom Haverstraw. Tom, what's up?
Not a whole lot, man. Just still waiting like everybody else, trying to figure out, where's James Harden going to sign?
No kidding. Where's James Harden going to sign as well? Where's Jonathan Kuminga going to sign? Where's Jalen Duren going to go? What money is he going to get? Still some lingering questions. It's funny. I was on The Herd the other day, and I was asked, hey, like, are you sleeping? Are you getting much sleep with LeBron James still ongoing? It's like, yeah, I'm sleeping like a baby because I'm just waiting for everybody else. What am I going to do? Be up all up in the middle of the night every night waiting for LeBron to make his decision? Tom, as media and as fans, nobody can let this dictate their life. Whenever he makes the choice, it happens. It just hasn't happened yet. Hopefully it happens soon, though. I'd love for it to happen today in the next 30 to 45 minutes or so. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if like it happens during the day, maximum exposure on what all the networks. I don't think it's going to leak like at 2 a.m. I don't think that's what's going to happen. No. Everything has been choreographed. I think they're going to try to go for maximum daylight here. So the idea that like this is going to leak in the middle of the night while everybody's sleeping, I think that's ridiculous. So yeah, I just, you know, I've got kids, I've got family, it's the summer. It's not to say we're not going to do the work, but it's like LeBron's going to make his choice. We've already outlined what the likely suitors are. And at this point, Kevin, I just feel like everyone's just waiting. And when it happens, it happens. And like Rich Paul said, when he makes the choice, he'll make it, which is such a great line. When he makes the choice, he'll make it.
Yeah. I don't think anybody knows. I've had so many different conversations with people around the league. I've talked to people who are convinced it's Cleveland. I've talked to people who think it's Miami for sure. I've talked to people who think the Wolves are out, the Warriors are out. I've talked to people who think the Wolves and the Warriors are still in. I don't think anybody knows. And ultimately, as I wrote about yesterday on Yahoo Sports, the popular theory that I've had shared with me from a bunch of different people around the league is that LeBron James has been slow playing his decision to see if any of the potential suitors could land Anthony Davis or Kyrie Irving. And if one of the teams was capable of acquiring one of his former teammates, it might sway him in that direction. That said, well, with that theory, Tom, like Kyrie is not available from Dallas. And for Cleveland, if you're flipping James Harden somewhere else to get Kyrie back for a 2016 reunion, are you going to give up a lot to do that? Harden plays every night. Kyrie plays half the season. And then with Anthony Davis, again, the Wizards have shown no indication that they actually want to trade Anthony Davis. And so for the Warriors, the team often linked to AD, do you want to give up Butler and X amount of draft picks to go get a guy again who plays half the season? I think these are very real, you know, things that LeBron James may have wanted, but I don't think they're actually tangibly happening now in either case. And so I think all this waiting around with AD is very possible with his August 6th date for his four-year, $280 million extension number with the Washington Wizards to see how that plays out. But I think it's possible LeBron might just be choosing from the teams that are on paper as they are, as Rich Paul hinted about last week, that it's just going to be about nothing else except for choosing with what the teams as they are.
Yeah, I think this is pretty obvious what's happening here, Kev. I think it's pretty clear that LeBron is waiting for one of these teams to make a move that makes him happy. And Rich Paul has said, look, we're not asking teams to go above and beyond. Now, that's an interesting phrasing where on his podcast, Rich Paul is saying, look, these teams don't need to do anything else above and beyond. And I'm sitting there being like, well, if you went and made some requests, let's say LeBron doesn't want to play with James Harden. Let's say he doesn't want to play with Joel Embiid. That would be something that these teams could take that intel, go into the market and see if they can swing a deal. Or if LeBron went in and said, I want to play with Kyrie. I want to play with AD. And until one of those other shoes drop, I don't think we're going to see much movement from LeBron James's camp, because he knows he has leverage right now. Is, hey, you don't have perfect information. The Minnesota Timberwolves do not have perfect information about what the Philadelphia 76ers, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Miami Heat and the Golden State Warriors are willing to do. And so he's playing this off of each other. I think this is, there's a reason why LeBron has not said, hey, it's come down to two teams. Like, it's either Cleveland or Golden State, or it's Cleveland and Miami. I think the more suitors that are in the game, the more leverage he has to play them off each other. And so I think the AD point that you made in your column this week is an excellent one, because as we saw with Jaylen Brown in Boston, when teams make a decision about whether to give them these max extensions or these monster extensions, if they don't put that on the table, things can go sideways very quickly, and then the dominoes start to fall. Mm-hmm. And so when you are starting to see the calendar move into late July and possibly early August, there really isn't any difference between LeBron making his decision now and early August in terms of what other teams are going to do. But if there's an extension on the table, like you mentioned for Anthony Davis, then you can see why LeBron is slow playing this and deciding, you know what, why do I want to do this deal now, make my decision now, when I'm going to have a lot more information in 2 weeks? And so I think LeBron James is just waiting for these teams to make the move. They haven't made it yet, which is why he hasn't made his decision. I think it's pretty obvious, dude. Like, as now, LeBron James has all the information that he needs on these rosters, but he's making the decision based on what these rosters will do in the interim, and that's why I don't think he's made his decision. He's waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I think it's 100% spot on, Tom. And look, it's the type of thing where, logically, if LeBron wanted the Miami Heat, the Heat made their big move. They signed Giannis Antetokounmpo. They made their move. It's over. The roster is set, other than the potential for filling that slot with LeBron James or DeMar DeRozan if it's not LeBron James. But the roster itself is set. Philadelphia made their big move. They got Jaylen Brown. They made their draft picks. They added their depth pieces. They got rid of Drummond. They added Hook Porty. They did their moves, right? Unless there's other moves, a la Embiid, as you said, right? And these teams have made their moves. The teams who haven't made moves are Cleveland, are Golden State. Minnesota made their move already. They made their big trade. They went and got LaMelo Ball. These teams have made their moves. And so very clearly, logically, he's waiting for some of these other teams to see what their move is and what they're going to do, because the Miami roster is set. Philly is likely set. And so I think if he really wanted to sign with the Miami Heat, I would think it would have happened by now.
Yeah,
I would think it would have happened by now if he actually wanted the Heat. If there's nothing the Warriors could do, or if there's nothing the Cavaliers could do to make him, if there's nothing the Warriors or Cavaliers could do to make him want to go there instead of Miami, he'd be in Miami by now. It's just the way it is. I'd be shocked if he goes to Miami after all this, unless he's waiting for those teams to do something, and then they don't do anything, and then on August 7th, he's signing with the Miami Heat. Maybe that's what ends up happening here. But ultimately, I think for some of these teams, Tom, the place you're in now with LeBron James is you're getting a guy who turns 42 in December, who is entering year 24 of his career and has, you know, 1, 2, or 3 years left in his career. So the incentive to trade 2 firsts and 2 swaps to go get Anthony Davis with giving up Jimmy Butler, or the incentive to flip James Harden to go get pieces from another team, or to go get Kyrie Irving with giving up future draft capital, is much lower. That incentive is much lower than it was when LeBron James was 4 years younger, 10 years younger, 15 years younger, obviously. So I think for LeBron James, this is where he's facing a situation now that maybe you might want these things to change in Golden State or to change in Cleveland, but those teams don't feel clearly as much incentive to go out and make those changes, at least so far.
Right. If Anthony Davis was making $20 million a year, this is a different conversation. But because of the second apron and the fact that these, you know, we saw what happened with Jaylen Brown is teams, even if Jaylen Brown has been super healthy and dependable and reliable health-wise, I think teams are nervous about spending that kind, that percentage of the cap when you're dealing with a guy in his mid-30s. And so for LeBron, who played 60 games last year, not eligible to be All-NBA, and you're looking at him being 42 years, 43 years old, and then the prospect of adding another older veteran making max money, potentially in Anthony Davis or Kyrie Irving, I think the owners are drawing a hard line here and saying, in this new apron world, we're not willing to tie up all of our cap, even if LeBron's playing on the minimum or basically the taxpayer mid-level, what have you, with another guy who is injury riddled or someone who could be dead cap on my books going forward. And I do think that there is a question about whether LeBron James sees Joel Embiid as a guy who's reliable enough to hitch his wagon to that on a championship chase. Like, if you're LeBron, the Philadelphia option is pretty enticing. You got Tyrese Maxey, another clutch client. You got Jaylen Brown, who's an all-star. You got Joel Embiid and a bunch of young guys that can really elevate your team in the regular season, and he takes over in the postseason. But the real question is whether you want to hitch your wagon on a broken axle when you have other teams that have younger options that you can hitch your wagon to. And so for Joel Embiid, who's going to trade for that guy? You know, if before the Jaylen Brown trade, you could theoretically say, all right, we'll put in these picks, attach it to Joel Embiid, and make that trade. But now they don't have nearly the same kind of assets in order to swing Joel Embiid on someone else's books. And I don't even know how many teams are willing to do that. And so for me, I think LeBron is looking at the James Harden free agency, Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen, and saying, like, all right, what pieces on this roster with the Cavs can I swing? Because they lost Dean Wade. They don't have the perimeter defenders that you would want. Miami has them. I think Jaylen Brown in a lower usage role could be that guy. But you're seeing that LeBron James, if he's going to succeed in the postseason, he needs wing defenders. And the Cleveland Cavaliers do not have that. And so if you're LeBron, like Rich Paul said, there's not a perfect option everywhere. There's not a team that you can look at and say, they check off all the boxes. And Minnesota, as you pointed out, on the court, they check off a lot of boxes. They got that perimeter defender in Jaden McDaniels. You got LaMelo Ball, star power, Anthony Edwards, the shooting. You have the defense, the rim protector, Rudy Gobert. But the fact that this is drawn out as long as it has, to me, it feels like he is trying to move some chess pieces around with Rich Paul, putting pressure on the front office to get what he wants in Cleveland. And the big question is, who is that guy in Cleveland that would seal the deal for LeBron James to come back home again in Cleveland? I don't know who that guy is, but it's clearly not James Harden, because if that were the case, this would already have been done.
Well, a couple things. You mentioned Embiid's health. 39 games, 19 games, 38 games. Ever since he tore his meniscus during the 23-24 season, rushed back for the playoffs, then played in the Olympics, he has never been close to the same since then in terms of games played and in terms of performance on the court. This is a guy who was, you know, 35 basically points per game at the time of his injury during that 23-24 season. He was unbelievable. And he's fallen off a cliff ever since then. And so I think with Embiid, the injury concerns are there. I think even with Giannis, it's been 5 years since he won the championship. He hasn't finished any season. He's gotten hurt every year. The calf injuries are concerning that continue happening with him. So I think there's a little bit of concern there if I'm LeBron James going to Miami with Giannis as well. And I think that's going to be a thought on his mind. However, the players we're talking about, Anthony Davis, he was his teammate. Yeah, they won a title together in 2020, but he's played an average of 47 games per season since then. One of the reasons why your team never got back to the finals, never won another one ever since the 2020 bubble title, is because of Anthony Davis's shortcomings, because of his lack of durability. As well, Kyrie Irving, he hasn't played 70 games in a season in a decade. So if we're talking durability, the guys he likes also have their durability questions too. Le GM, I'm not so sure, is that good at building rosters, if we're being totally honest here. So I think the concerns about the guys he's going to and the guys he's played with, it is very common in some ways. Of course, it's far more extreme with a guy like Joel Embiid. And in regards to, you know, this idea of Cleveland, right? Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell, James Harden as the core four already there, adding LeBron James. Obviously, on paper, LeBron is an upgrade over Dean Wade. But in terms of perimeter defense, there's concerns with Harden, Mitchell, LeBron. In terms of floor spacing, there's concerns with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. And I also think it's interesting and worth noting when it comes to that Cleveland situation, what would it be that he wants them to do? Draymond Green on his podcast, The Draymond Green Show, during the playoffs, ripped apart Jared Allen, called him soft multiple times on the show, never understood how he folds in the playoffs compared to what he is in the regular season. I bet you Draymond and LeBron, as they're on this, you know, month-long date that they're on together, I guarantee they've had those conversations about the holes that the Cleveland roster has, especially when Draymond's trying to convince him to go to the Warriors instead of the Cavaliers. These are imperfect rosters in Cleveland. It's an imperfect roster in Miami. And Philly, with the Embiid question, is imperfect as well, which is why I keep coming back to Minnesota. It's like, to me, Minnesota, if it's purely about winning another title, trying to chase ring five, Minnesota is your best choice. But it seems like, at least though, thus far, Anthony Edwards said they're not in the top three according to the list out there. But from what I've been told, Tom, and the conversations I've had, is that LeBron hasn't told any team that they're out. He hasn't told the Warriors or the Wolves or the Knicks or any of those teams that they're out. And the convos I've had with agents, with executives, is like, if we're out, I'd like these teams to know if we're out, so at least some business can resume. Because if there's a player that could sign a contract with the Minnesota Timberwolves, but the Wolves need to wait on LeBron James, obviously that team would love to know if they're out so they could resume business. And I think that's the big holdup here for executives, for agents, for fans and media. As chaotically Cade said in the live YouTube chat, I get he deserves to take as much time as he wants, but I'm so tired of the drama and just want the offseason to be able to continue. That is the sentiment of everybody around the league. Like, at least tell some of the teams who are out that they're actually out.
We'll be right back.
The big game changer was when LeBron James has indicated that he doesn't want to sign a max contract, or he's not seeking a max contract, that money is not going to be priority number one here. Because then everybody's in the game. And then everybody is guessing who everybody else is going to do, what they're going to do in order to appease LeBron for his quote-unquote happiness. It's all nebulous, and it's all to be able to control the situation. If these teams realize, like, hey, you know what? It's just not worth it having our organization and our free agency and our offseason to be held hostage by LeBron's indecision. Then they would have just said, look, we're out on the LeBron business. It's been great. Appreciate you, LeBron. You're one of the best players to ever play. You're still an all-star, all-NBA talent, but we've decided to move on. The reason why no one's done that is because if LeBron is available at the vet minimum or the taxpayer mid-level, that's insane. He's an all-star, all-NBA player who played 60 games. It's not like he played 20 games or 40 games. If you can get 60 games of LeBron James playing all-NBA caliber basketball at the vet minimum or at the tax, like a $6 million guy, or even a 10, like, these teams are falling over themselves and not pulling themselves out of the bidding because the value that you would get on LeBron, not just as a basketball player, but on the business as a whole. I mean, there was a study done back in 2023. A BYU economist studied the ticket receipts, the merchandise, the TV ratings when LeBron is on the road versus when he's not playing in your city. And LeBron James was worth, in 2019, when this study was run, it was published in 23. LeBron was worth over $200 million of economic value in the NBA, and he was getting paid $50 million. So why are these teams still in the running? It's because he's such a blockbuster box office hit on the business. And plus, he's willing to go for a vet minimum, potentially. That's why teams are not pulling themselves out of the bidding, because it is such a boon for them to get LeBron James, even if he plays 40 games, 50 games on the business and from the basketball standpoint. And so I think Minnesota or all these teams that are still in the running now, if LeBron said, I want a max contract, you'd see them be like, look, we're out. We're not going to be able to carve out that kind of cap space. But because these teams still have these room exceptions or these mid-level exceptions and the vet minimum at their disposal, man, he is able to play, you know, the master puppet here and just say, I want this, I want that, I want this, and I want that. And if you're not willing to do it, well, then I'm sorry. Me at the vet minimum just isn't going to happen in your city.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting wrinkle here too, because you see some stuff about there about how the Cavs could pay him more than other teams. I don't think LeBron is sweating over, you know, 12 million of the mid-level compared to 2 million, 3 million veteran minimum. It's not a massive difference, at least when it comes to this decision. It's about winning and culture and family, and more than anything else. And the winning aspect is the tough part, because as Rich Paul has been open about, all of these situations are imperfect. And so I think for the Golden State Warriors, for them, for example, I can understand not wanting to trade Jimmy Butler and two firsts and a swap or whatever the cost would be to go get Anthony Davis, who can't finish seasons, who's hurt every year, who misses every other game. But I can also understand wanting to rather say, hey, come here and we'll make a deal later in the summer or during the season. The question is, who? The Warriors are one of the teams, according to my league sources, that has inquired about Trey Murphy from the Pelicans. But my sources have continuously said for weeks now that the Pelicans have resisted all trade offers. I've had some executives say to me that they wonder how serious Joe Dumars and the Pelicans front office actually is about anything about this, if they're actually just listening to offers. My impression is that the Pelicans actually intend to compete next season. How much are they going to compete? They sucked last year, even though Zion was incredibly healthy. I think it's delusional to think that they have any chance of making the playoffs in the Western Conference. It's not going to happen. They stink. But that's their intentions, and I don't think they want to trade Trey Murphy. And so for Golden State or any of these other teams, I don't think you're going to go get Trey Murphy unless you're going way over the top. And so there's just not a lot out there right now when it comes to other potential big pieces that could move. Those pieces have already moved. Like Jaylen Brown has already moved. And I think if you want to look at a team like Golden State, for example, you can point to them and say, wait a minute, Jaylen Brown went for a Paul George and some picks, just a couple of picks. We could have topped that offer. The Warriors easily could have topped that offer if they wanted to top it with Jimmy Butler as an expiring, plus as many picks as they wanted to give up. They have six future firsts plus a protected first, so they could give up two unprotected firsts, one protected first, four swaps. They had a lot of draft capital to move. So if anything, you could criticize a team like the Warriors for not moving earlier to go get a Jaylen Brown, or moving earlier at the deadline to go get Anthony Davis at a time he was more acquirable than he is right now in Washington. But it seems like for backup options right now, from my impression, it's pretty dry out there.
Well, I feel like the Golden State Warriors situation is so fascinating, because Steph Curry can be a free agent next year. You know, I don't think he's going anywhere. But you look at their books, Kevin. The Warriors have almost no money after next year. The Draymond Green's a free agent. Sure, he could come back. Steph Curry's probably going to come back. I don't think he's going anywhere. Jimmy Butler's an expiring deal. Kristaps Porzingis, player option for next year. Moses Moody's at $13 million. Lindenberg is going to start on his rookie scale contract. Pajemski is a restricted free agent next year. What? There's nothing on the books. So if you're Mike Dunleavy and you're looking at the future of Golden State, it's a blank canvas. And so the only thing I can point to that is their master plan here is, all right, we want to maintain maximum flexibility next year and build around Steph Curry for his swan song. But isn't that LeBron? Isn't that like what does Steph Curry want in the last couple of years? It's competing. And that's why I don't understand like the Anthony Davis thing. It's like you're not building around Anthony Davis, right? But the alternative is that you have Jimmy Butler coming off an ACL injury. And so it's like, I understand why in a vacuum, you don't want his salary cap on the books and his contract on the books. But it's just, what is the goal here? And you wrote that like if Joe Lacob wants to build around Steph Curry, then let's do it already. Like what is the grand plan here? If you're trying to sell the team to have clean books next year, I mean, that would make more sense given the situation. They have no money 27 and beyond. And so you have to ask yourself, are they really trying to build around Stephen Curry? Jimmy Butler, they did a swing there and it didn't work out in terms of he tore his ACL. And maybe they're a little gun shy right now about acquiring another injury riddled player who's around the same age in Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, LeBron James. What happens if they get hurt? And Steph Curry's just sitting there like, man, we took a big swing. And now the Golden State Warriors are looking at 3+ years of just being in cap purgatory because they decided to go all in. And I'm just like, if you're a Golden State fan, I'm sitting here saying, give Steph one more shot. Let's go Avengers style, bring in LeBron. If it's Anthony Davis, Steve Kerr came back for a reason. He wants to compete at a high level. And it seems like ownership does not want to do that because they want that blank canvas for the post-Steph era. But as we've shown, Steph's not ready to go and ride off into the sunset. He's still an all-NBA player, and I think he's got a few more years of playing at that level.
It's embarrassing. If I'm a Warriors fan, I'm just fed up. I'm so annoyed with Steph still being a top 5 to 10 player in the league. Draymond has shown this past year the way he performed against Wemby and Jokic on opening night, the performance against Kawhi Leonard, that when he flips the switch, he can still be one of the best defenders of all time. He can't do it every night like he did in the prime of his career athletically, but he can do it when he needs to in certain moments. And like that, you look at this team with those two guys, Steph and Draymond, still being at that level, and then you add in the possibility of getting LeBron James, who is still a top 15 to 20 guy who had stretches last year where he still looked like a top 10 player. You can add that guy to the bunch if it means just giving up some future picks to go get Anthony Davis, who, despite his injury concerns, still is a top 20 to 25 guy, still is a great defender, still a great finisher, still a great connective piece. With Pods and Jaxel Lindenborg and Santos and Richards and some of these young guys, please just go for it. That's how I feel if I'm a Warriors fan. And the fact that it's been all this two-timeline nonsense for the last 4 or 5 years, and that failed, it flopped completely. And now when they're in this ultra-conservative space right now where they're just afraid to do anything at all, to give up any future picks, I just sit back and I wonder, what's the real plan here with all these expiring contracts and all that? Is Joe Lacob thinking about selling? Is that what this is about? Is Lacob in a position where he's like, once this is over, let's keep the future picks because we want to maintain future value in a post-Steph era? Is this about selling in the future? Because I just have a hard time understanding how it could be anything else when the team is what it is with the opportunities that are on the table for them to pursue. I just don't get it, Tom. I don't get it. If I'm a Warriors fan, I'm just completely flabbergasted by how their inability to make a big move.
Do you think Lindenberg is a guy that's going to be kind of the Andrew Wiggins for them? Is just like, we drafted him, we like him, but we're ultimately going to flip him to go get another guy. And maybe that's the plan, is to pair him with Jimmy Butler. And that market has not gotten to a point where they're willing to pull the trigger. But then again, like, all the signs point to what you're describing is it seems like Joe Lacob wants this Steph Curry era to end, because why aren't you building right now for him to maximize the Steph Curry window? You know, because are they just spinning their wheels, just being in that middle, in the hunt, filling up Chase Center because they got Steph Curry in the building? And I feel like that'd be such a waste. He's so good. And what we saw in Paris with LeBron and AD and Draymond, where it's like, yeah, if you could get those, that magic one last time, I feel like that would be magic. It would be awesome to watch that. And look, maybe it doesn't win a title. Okay. But I think for the regular season, for the energy of the regular season, and maybe they can do something in the postseason and make a run, I would love to see that. I would love to see Steph Curry and LeBron go at it one more time together, like they did in Paris. But it just seems like the Warriors are keeping their powder dry for when they want to go in the post-Steph era and rebuild. But to me, I feel like Lindenberg and what he did in the summer league and what he showed, it seems like they're going to try to figure out what his market value would be in the opportunity that they could go and get another guy. Otherwise, I just don't understand what they expect from Jimmy Butler coming off an ACL tear this year. Like, if this team was a bunch of young guys and you're like, hey, Jimmy Butler, take the year off and come back a year from now and it'll be good. We'll be fine. Like the Portland Trailblazers, when they were like, Dame, take the year off. We're willing to like build around you in a couple years. And we got Denny Avdia, we got Tamani Kamara, we got Scoot Henderson. We'll develop these young guys, and when you're ready to come back, we'll be good. That's not the situation with Golden State. They got Steph Curry at 37 years old, and I don't understand why they haven't flipped Jimmy Butler and the expiring contract already, unless they're working on something right now.
Could be. But all indications are Jimmy, they're happy with him. At the trade deadline, they tried to move Draymond Green, not Jimmy Butler, for Giannis Antetokounmpo. Bernie Lee, Jimmy Butler's agent, went public last month and through Anthony Slater released a statement saying that the Warriors told him that they're going to work together and keep him. So I don't know. I know they're happy with Jimmy. That's a fact that they're happy with Jimmy. But I also know they've had interest in Anthony Davis. And so, hey, I don't really know how that's going to play out there. All I know is that if you add LeBron James with Draymond Green standing in one corner, I'm not so sure that Jimmy Butler is going to be quite happy standing in the other corner every single possession as Steph and LeBron run everything through each other. Jonathan Kuminga, he is the guy that they held on to for far too long. He is the guy that they offered an extension that he should have said yes to. And now he is in a position where he is still a free agent as we near August now, with the Lakers, Cavaliers, Bucks, and Clippers as the teams reportedly interested in signing Jonathan Kuminga. Jovan Bua reported the other day that the Lakers made an offer in the 2 years, $20 million total range, and that Kuminga wants something more in the 1 year, annually, $20 million. So he wants $20 million annually. Not $20 million total over 2 years, which is A, over the mid-level exception of over roughly $15 million. So it's good luck getting that at this point of free agency. And secondly, if you're Jonathan Kuminga, boy, you had a trial with the Atlanta Hawks, a team that just traded away Zachary Risacher, dumped him, a former number one pick, and that there are minutes available in that front court for a young guy like you after trying out for 3 months after the trade, and the Hawks want nothing to do with you. Nothing. And I think for Jonathan Kuminga, who has this unrealistic view of what he is as a player, it's time to look in the mirror, buddy, and realize you're not that guy. And nobody thinks you're that guy because the Atlanta Hawks gave you a shot and it didn't work out. And so I think for Kuminga, who's now facing a situation where he could play for his third team within 1 year, it's not a great place to be. And I think for him, Steve Kerr has long had the right vision. Sean Marion, right, hit spot out threes, attack closeouts, make the quick decision, play your butt off on defense, crash the boards. You can make a hell of a lot of money playing like Sean Marion and Sean Marion's heyday, but also today, Aaron Gordon type of guys. You make a lot of money. OG Anunoby had the moment of the finals with that putback, with that game-winning offensive board. So playing in that style and that spirit, you don't need to have the ball in your hands all the time to be a star, to achieve a lot in your career and to make a lot of money. So I hope for him in this next stop, wherever it is, I hope, he embraces that while also, you know, hey, growing as a player on ball a little bit. But first and foremost, I think Kerr had it right. And we're seeing that right now.
Yeah, I see him as more of a Kyle Kuzma type, a guy who bounces from team to team, who hopes that they can get a good shooting year out of him. And he has a lot more promise and a lot more like people like talk themselves into Kyle Kuzma every year as a guy who he can maybe put it all together and make himself into an all-star player. That never really happened, never really materialized. But I think that's a fair comp for Jonathan Kuminga, is just like a good rotation guy, good starter on a team that might not be chasing championships. That's why like the Bucks, I'm not surprised that the Bucks are trying to get in the business or trying to see what the market is, what they can get him for. Because to me, that's what he is a guy who's going to be able to fill up the scoring column, make some highlight reel plays in the regular season. But I don't see him as a playoff guy, at least not yet. He's still young, 23 years old, but it's pretty clear that when Steve Kerr is out on you and then the Atlanta Hawks with Quinn Snyder has every opportunity to give him a chance in the postseason and long term, they decided, yeah, we're still not all in on Jonathan Kuminga, even though we acquired him at the deadline. That to me tells me that Jonathan Kuminga is not anywhere near ready to be a playoff contributor. And for a guy who has that kind of talent and that kind of explosiveness, look, Sean Marion, that is so far away from where he is right now. And I know that that's a kind of a carrot for a coach to put in front of him and say, hey, that's what I want you to be. That's what you can be. And like that, we need you to start playing like that, be a winning player, do all the little things, and then you can go and run your offense and do ISOs and get play calls for you. But we need you to do all of the stuff, the little stuff, the blue collar stuff first, and then you can kind of get that green light. To me, a rebuilding team like the Milwaukee Bucks seems like the logical destination for Jonathan Kuminga, because the fact that they couldn't get enough of a market for him, and then he ended up on the Atlanta Hawks, who decided to bail a few months later. Not a good sign.
Not a good sign at all for him, Tom. Not a good sign one bit. There's some coaching news this week. Okay, it kind of came out of nowhere. The Houston Rockets are hiring Chip England away from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Chip spent a few years there in OKC after a long career alongside Greg Popovich with the San Antonio Spurs. Chip England, some of his success stories back in San Antonio, Kawhi Leonard being the big one, improving his jumper. And then with the OKC Thunder, he was pivotal in improving Josh Giddey's shot, which has carried over to the Chicago Bulls since that trade, Giddey for Caruso. In Houston, there's a number of projects for him. There's Alperen Şengün, who's always liked to shoot, has never been a high-efficiency shooter. The big one, of course, there is Amen Thompson. Amen Thompson, who has everything else you want. Elite defense, elite driving to the basket, elite rebounding, speed, athleticism, the mentality. He's got it all, except for the broken jump shot. Just an absolutely broken, horrific jump shot. I think for Chip England, you feel good about your chances of helping Şengün or Jabari Smith being more consistent and those types of guys. But Amen Thompson, I don't know, Tom. I'm not so sure there with Amen Thompson. And one of the reasons why I feel that way is because you look at Detroit with his twin brother, Ausar Thompson. The Pistons hired Fred Vinson, another great shooting coach, had a lot of success when he was in New Orleans. Lonzo Ball credits Fred Vinson every chance he can for helping improving his jump shot. He helped improve Brandon Ingram's shot, among others, in New Orleans in his time there. He went to Detroit, and Ausar Thompson has not improved a lick. I think Amen and Ausar, it's very possible they're like the anti-Stephen Curry. Steph has like, there's something in his fingers. Like there's something in his hands and in his eyes, the hand-eye coordination he has. There's something you can't teach with the touch that Steph has in a way that it's inherited from his father, Del Curry, who was also a great shooter. I think Amen and Ausar are just the opposite. They just don't have good touch in their hands. There's no solving it, is my gut feeling with those guys. Because I'll tell you what, they have tried to move heaven and earth to try to improve their jumpers already in their lives, and it hasn't. And so it would be a miracle if Chip England is the guy who can help improve Amen Thompson's. One of the greatest coaching achievements we've ever seen, if Chip England can turn Amen Thompson into a solid shooter.
Top five free agency acquisition. I'm just going to say it. Chip England. I mean, what you're describing, if they can get Alperen Şengün to shoot threes at a high rate, yeah, or Amen Thompson, then it obviously is one of the best free agency acquisitions of the summer. Like that swing piece of the Houston Rockets core players being legit spacers or having at least a jumper that could be reliable, that teams have to, when they see Alper and Şengün line up at the top of the key, that they have to go out and chase and close them out. That's worth millions of dollars. And so Chip Englund, the fact that he left OKC, I was shocked because OKC had a bunch of guys on the team that you would need their spacing around, you know, guys like Isaiah Hartenstein, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, more of a mid-range guy. And then when Chip Englund works with him and is able to develop him into a pull-up three-point shooter, that turns him into a super-duper star. And for the Houston Rockets to get Chip Englund, like, I know it's been a quiet summer in free agency, maybe not in trades, but like I thought this was an awesome hire for the Houston Rockets. And we've talked about it here on this show, Kevin, how the Ime Udoka development has been a real concern. And the fact that you've got all these young players that have not taken these big strides forward, especially come playoff time. One of the issues is their spacing. And one of the issues, the reason why they wanted to go get Kevin Durant was because of the spacing and the really rough offense that happens in the playoffs when they get slowed down into a half court. The biggest reason why you have those issues is because teams know they don't have to rotate. You're not going to get put in a blender against the Houston Rockets. But now with Chip Englund, who is the shot whisperer, if he can get one or two of those guys to become a reliable shooter, a shooting threat, doesn't have to be Steph Curry or Klay Thompson out there. We're not asking for that. We're just asking for that they don't do the Rajon Rondo against you, the Tony Allen against you, and the Ben Simmons against you, and just stand around in the paint and dare you to shoot. If he can just make a little bit of threat from beyond the arc in Şengün, Amen Thompson, and get Jabari Smith Jr. into an actual knockdown shooter, this Houston offense just levels up. And Chip Englund, I think, was an amazing hire by the Houston Rockets.
I think so too. Tari Eason, another name. If he can find more consistency as a shooter, I think some of these guys on the roster, I don't feel much confidence with Amen Thompson personally, but some of these other guys like Alperen Şengün and Jabari Smith and Tari Eason, I think there is saving their shots, and we'll see over the course of time. I do think it's a good hire, and I think oftentimes when an assistant coach changes teams, it's not big news, but we're talking about it because it is noteworthy. It was noteworthy when Chip Englund left San Antonio for Oklahoma City, and we saw the dramatic improvement that so many of the guys there experienced, whether it's Giddey, Dort, so many guys on that team. The same thing could happen here. And we'll be right back after this break. Let's move on to some mailbag questions before we go today, Tom. If you want to submit mailbag questions for future podcasts, leave a comment on YouTube or on Spotify. Hit me up on social media at Kevin O'Connor. Either DM me on Instagram, message me on X, just respond to something, whatever, or email us at kocshow@yahoosports.com with your mailbag questions that will sprinkle in the podcast throughout the NBA offseason. First question, this one is from Benny on Threads. He said, what do you expect from Peyton Pritchard this year? Is the hype around him, i.e. the Brunson comps, overblown? Tom, you wrote about Pritchard pretty in depth at the time of the Jaylen Brown trade when it came to what he did last season without Jaylen Brown on the floor. And it's intriguing. Like, those were all-star level numbers. Can you get into some of the stuff that you found about Pritchard? And do you think the hype is warranted as well?
Yeah, I didn't know if I was going to get it aggregated in that piece. Like, I wrote that he could be a mini Jalen Brunson, and I knew that as soon as I did that, the NBA Dunk Centrals of the world and the Legion Hoops of the world were going to get a grab a hold of that and run with it, and they did. I said a mini Jalen Brunson. I wasn't saying he was going to become a Finals MVP and a top 10 player, but what I was making the comp of is an undersized guard who was playing behind Luka Doncic and really blossomed, and the per minute numbers that we saw behind Luka Doncic in Dallas translated once he was able to be the main guy. And I think the Boston Celtics, in trading Jaylen Brown, I think whether they talked about this or not, I think the implication is they expect a big year out of Peyton Pritchard because he's been that guy last season off the bench, well, he started for the majority of the season, but in the minutes without Jaylen Brown, his numbers went from 17 points every 75 possessions on the floor to 27 points every 75 possessions while Jaylen Brown was on the bench. His true shooting percentage maintained, got even better in some respects. His three-point shooting, as good, if not better, without Jaylen Brown. You would think that all the gravity of Jaylen Brown and the defenders that he sucks into the paint and then kicks out to Peyton Pritchard, he would get more open looks. Didn't matter. Peyton Pritchard's effectiveness got way better when Jaylen Brown was out of the picture. Averaged 25-7-5 in the 10 games that he played without Jaylen Brown, and they won 8 out of those 10 games. So small sample size without Jaylen Brown in uniform, but even with him on the bench, Peyton Pritchard was an all-star. By the numbers, he was an absolute all-star. And so I think Peyton Pritchard is due for a breakout season, sixth man of the year a couple years ago. But I do see that a similar jump in terms of going from a bench guy into a starter, into an all-star player that Jalen Brunson did. I am not saying he's going to be a finals MVP. And if there's one big difference between Jalen Brunson and Peyton Pritchard, and there are some, the biggest difference is their free throw rate. You know, you look at Peyton Pritchard, his ability to score at a high level, that's unquestioned. But the thing that made Jalen Brunson a clutch and finals MVP is the footwork that allowed him to get to the free throw line and get efficient points. That's something that Peyton Pritchard has not been able to add to his game yet, averaging 1.7 free throws per game last year. And when you look at his skill set, that is the biggest thing that he lacks. And one thing that he, with his footwork and his ability to get buckets and ISOs, already one of the most efficient ISO players and effective ISO players in the league. But one thing he can really level up on, Kevin, and I'm curious if you think he can get there, is right now he's kind of a CJ McCollum score, where super efficient, 50-40-90 type efficiency. But that 90% is a little overblown because he's not getting to the free throw line a lot. And CJ McCollum in Portland and in Atlanta and New Orleans, this is the kind of thing that I kept saying is like, what if he is able to draw fouls at a level of some of his counterparts? He just never really added that to his game. And that's something that I worry about with Peyton Pritchard is, can he be that kind of player where Jaylen Brunson was able to get 6, 7, 8 double-digit free throw attempts a night? CJ McCollum just never did that. And maybe that's the comp for Peyton Pritchard is being a 25-point scorer, 20, 23-point scorer in the NBA. That's awesome. But if he wants to really make the leap, go from an all-star caliber player into a franchise cornerstone, that takes a lot more. And I think a lot of it is that free throw comp, which is one of his biggest weaknesses.
The Brunson comp is not going to happen. I thought your framing was very fair. A mini Brunson. For all the reasons you stated, Tom, I think it's very possible. The numbers with Jaylen Brown off the floor last season are highly impressive on a per-minute basis, and I do think we're going to see a leap from Peyton Pritchard this year. And as we talked about at the time of the trade, you know, the bet on Tatum, the bet on Pritchard, the bet on some of these young guys, Ugo Gonzalez, Baylor Shireman. I think you had said earlier, Tom, you were like, I don't know if the Celtics talked about this. Well, I mean, I remember I watched that whole Brad Stevens presser at the time that it happened live. And like during the presser, it was like 35 minutes in. I was like, nobody's asked about Tatum, like the bet on Tatum here. I was like shocked. Nobody asked about Tatum or Pritchard. Like the word, the name wasn't even uttered. And then a great local reporter from Boston 25, Lauren Walsh, she asked about Tatum, like how much of this, I'm paraphrasing the question, how much of this is a belief in that Tatum is capable of more? I was like, finally, come on, guys. That's what this is about. It's about Tatum. It's about Pritchard. It's about the existing guys on the roster and the leap that they could take. And Brad Stevens completely sidestepped the question and, Jaylen's a great player. Jaylen Brown's a great player. And we like our guys on the roster. It was like a total non-answer, but that's what it's about. That's what it's about. It is about Peyton Pritchard taking a leap. So thanks for the question, Benny. I think the Brunson comp is a bit much, but mini Brunson, that's not over the top at all. Not one bit. Next question here, Tom, from Deep Fried Stack on Threads. He asked, Caleb Wilson seemed more like a four originally. Now he looks like a souped up version of Manus Muzelis. How do you play them both to maximum effectiveness? I think this is a good question because with Chicago at the time of the draft, when Caleb Wilson was selected, I was like, well, I hope Bulls fans aren't expecting him to be their center. I hope they're not expecting him to be their anchor. He can be one of your anchors, like as an off-ball guy, as a helper, more in the Jaren Jackson role, but you need a true five. And I think after seeing him in Summer League, it's not that he's just a four. It's that, oh, wait a minute. This guy's a wing. He's a wing. And you already got Manus Muzelis, another big guy who can handle the ball, who's a big stretched out wing player. And then you add Caleb Wilson to the mix here. And Noah Senge did not go well for him in Summer League at all. He looks absolutely horrific. But you're going to forgive that. He hasn't played since October. I'm going to give it time. Josh Giddey, a big jumbo size guard. You signed Norman Powell. You traded for Nick Claxton. Like, this team is big. It's big and long and versatile. And so I don't really have the answer of what we're going to see the Bulls do here with Thiago Splitter, their new head coach. But I do think with what we saw Splitter and taking over for Chauncey Billups with Danny Avdija, with having a big creator is at least a potential template for how we're going to see them use both Caleb Wilson and Danny Avdija. Tom's reacting to that dunk on screen that we just saw. Just the dunk that Wilson had where he leapt from, I don't know, like outside the paint. It looked like he was near like the middle of a three-point line in the paint when he leapt. It's just insane, the athleticism this guy has. And so I look forward to seeing what Splitter does with these guys, Tom. Based off of watching Portland this whole, you know, past year with Danny Avdija exploding, what do you expect for Wilson and Muzelis as kind of a tandem together under Splitter?
Well, let's just pump the brakes a little bit. I don't think we don't need to have any conversations about, oh, how will they play together? Like, the Bulls fans are excited. Let's see them play together before we can get worried that they kind of overlap too much and they can't share the ball. Let's just, like, can we chill a little bit?
Should they split them up like Tatum and Brown and Jarrell and Bogdanovich? What are we going to do?
I was just thinking to myself, the Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum comp. We just saw a team deal with this for years and years and years. Let's just enjoy this. We haven't even seen Caleb Wilson's suit up yet next to Manus Muzelis. They're exciting. Do we need to figure it out right now? No, we don't need to figure it out right now. Just, I think Thiago Splitter, a lot of times last year on the broadcast, we would be watching and we'd be like, wait, is Tomati Kamara playing the five right now? Oh, wait, yeah, they took out Donovan Klingon and Rob Williams and Dwop Reith, and you don't have any five out there. And so Caleb Wilson and Manus Muzelis could absolutely be a four and a five. They could absolutely be the three and the four. And when you have a guy like Josh Giddey, who's an elite playmaker, I don't think you're going to be worried too much about whether they're going to get enough touches. I think when you have Caleb Wilson, who, I mean, the comps for Caleb Wilson just went out the window after Summer League because he completely transformed his ceiling. I mean, Kevin Garnett feels like the appropriate comp here, and he is kind of like a skeleton key when you talk about lineups. And Manus Muzelis, can he fit next to Caleb Wilson? He's not the same type of playmaker and a guy who's going to be able to lead your team and assist that Kevin Garnett in his prime with the Minnesota Timberwolves could. But I don't have any. I'm not there yet to have any sort of concerns about how Manus Muzelis and Caleb Wilson are going to coexist together. Let's have them coexist for a couple years before we start worrying about whether they can do this together and win in the postseason. I think it's exciting, but I kind of feel like we get a little ahead of ourselves I don't want to tell fans what to think, but sometimes I feel like just enjoy the ride a little bit. Enjoy the unpredictability. Thiago Splitter played some wonky lineups last year without a point guard, without a center, and it worked out okay. And I think what you're going to see with Manus Muzelis and Caleb Wilson is a lot of tinkering and a lot of like, hey, what if Manus decides to run the point? Or what if Caleb Wilson decides to run the point? Because for Thiago Splitter, I think he understands this is like, these are two really young players, highly talented, versatile players, athletes, guys who get after it. I think it's going to be a couple more years before we figure out what these players, how you want to allocate their minutes or where they operate on the floor. Let's just have some fun in this rookie season for Caleb Wilson and not put that expectation on. That's one thing Tiago Splitter did last year, is not put an expectation or a ceiling on Donovan Klingon. He said, if Donovan Klingon wants to shoot 3-4 threes a game, let's see it. And that developmental phase last year was really big for Donovan Klingon. I could see that happening for Modest Muzelis, and Caleb Wilson is just essentially saying, if you believe you have this skill set, why not? The expectation isn't a playoff team next year. The expectation is we want to contend for the next decade. And whatever helps us do that, I think he's going to want to experiment next season.
I think Tiago Splitter, the year he had in Portland, bodes well for the year he could have, the career he could have as a head coach with the Chicago Bulls, especially given all the young talent this team has. Of course, Splitter left Portland. Tom, news came out this week that you also are leaving the Portland Trailblazers broadcast. You were one of the cuts of many in the Blazers organization. That sucks, man. Obviously, I mean, sorry it happened. I mean, I'm hopeful that, you know, good stuff pops up for you. You should be on a broadcast somewhere in the league. The insights you're able to provide live on a broadcast that enhance that
all
amazing
right. All
Blazers
right.
broadcast.
All right,
I'll stop. But like, it sucks. But you know, it's too bad, man. I feel bad for Blazers fans because that was a great broadcast there, and you never know what could look like on the other side of that for all those local games.
Yeah, man. I've been in this business a long time. I've been laid off before. My contract was year to year with the Blazers. And so every year my contract was up for renewal, and they decided inform me recently. It didn't happen in the last couple of days. I just want to make things clear is that I didn't get the call yesterday. But once the news came out, I think someone reported from the business journal, Sports Business Journal, that I was one of the cuts. And that is true. And that was tough news to hear. I had an absolute blast on the broadcast, and I hope that breathed through to the fans. And certainly the messages that I've been getting in the past 24 hours since the news broke have been really reassuring that we did some awesome work with the Blazers. I mean, the integrating storyteller like me, where I can take stats, analytics, if you want to call it that, and make them come to life on the screen, where we can track the development of Tomani Kamara in ways that maybe not show up in the box score, or ways that Donovan Klingon and the spacing that he provides, or Denny Avdia, you're not going to see in the box score how many and ones he gets. But if you look in the secondary numbers and the analytics, this is a guy who's an all-star. And I had so much fun. And even though we were going, you know, 10 o'clock Eastern tip off, work until 1 or 2 in the morning, I had an absolute blast. And I got an Emmy out of it. This over my shoulder, that's with the Blazers. Like I had so many things that I'll think back on that I'm so thankful for. And new ownership came in. My producer last year, Greg Fonseca, that I worked with at ESPN, left at the end of the season to go take a job with the NBA. And so I knew changes were coming and things were going to be different this year. But I just feel bad for Blazers fans that I think had drew a real connection to Kevin Calabro, who's not going to be back. You saw his comments yesterday. I just got to say, working with him, yeah, he's a man. He's a wordsmith, that guy. And I always giggled during you would catch me laughing on hot mics, laughing at some of the things that Kevin Calabro was saying, jitterbugging into the lane, like through the wickets. Like some of his phrasing is amazing. And you saw in the quotes this week that he is a man who can spin a phrase really well. And I do think Brooke Olsendam, Michael Holton, Lamar Hurd, it was an all-star cast, and it was a real honor to be a part of it. And I'll just say that like it stinks because the Blazers organization has some incredible employees, and the staff behind the scenes were second to none. And doing a remote broadcast from the East Coast, doing it live on air in Portland, is an insane idea. It's an insane idea. We pulled it off and we won an Emmy and we did a lot of great work together. We had a lot of laughs on the broadcast, and I'm just sad that it's over, but I'm very grateful for the time that we had. And I just want to say to the Blazers fans out there, we love doing that show for you guys. The three years that I was with the program was the best, like professionally, the most fun I've had. And so I'm sad that it's over, and I'm going to be still here on this show, Kevin. I've also got my Substack, TomTheFighter.com, and Basketball Illuminati. So, like, I'm not going anywhere. My family's going to be okay, but it is really sad. Like, genuinely, I'm really bummed that I'm not going to be able to track the rise of Scoot Henderson, Denny Avdia, Tamani Kamara, and the rest of that team. Really fun to watch, and I just hope that the Blazers fans are taken care of in the end, because right now it's tough times.
Yeah, it's definitely tough times right now, and that's what the arena deal. Tom Dundon, the new owner, has pretty firmly said he's not going to contribute any private money towards renovation or to a new arena. And I think right now what's happening, and this is from a YouTube comment, Sky Falcon said, so is there any hope for the Blazers in Portland, or are they doomed? I do think there's hope for the Blazers in Portland. I think this is, right now, from Dundon's perspective, taking advantage of a moment in time in the NBA where there's expansion potentially happening with Las Vegas and Seattle. And so at this particular moment, when it comes to his unwillingness to put in private money for new arena or renovations, he's in a spot right now where, in theory, he could say, we'll move to Vegas or we'll move to Seattle. But once those paths are gone, Seattle and Vegas, once they have teams, once they have ownerships that are going to build arenas there or start the teams there, Portland suddenly has nowhere to go. Where are they going to go? Like Louisville? Where are they going to go? To Vancouver? You know, where are they going to move to? I don't know what's out there for the Portland Trailblazers to move to. I think I would imagine that this is just a standoff publicly right now, obviously a high-stakes standoff right now. And that he's just going all in right now, trying to take advantage of the moment in time with expansion happening in the NBA. And once those teams do have their owners, that's where leverage is lost for Dundon in the situation in Portland. But that's just my gut feeling. I'm not reporting that to be completely clear. Just my gut feeling about how things are playing out. And I hope Blazers keep their team there.
I certainly do too. I mean, Bill Walton, if they leave, Bill Walton would be rolling over in his grave. Mm-hmm. Just, it would be a real shame if those fans, they are, I mean, the messages I've gotten from the fans and like the families and the kids, it's just, it hits differently in Portland. They don't have another major sport there. And so the Blazers are just, they're like religion. It's something I didn't take for granted while I was there. And so that's why this is so painful to watch from afar, is like the soul of the city, is intertwined with the Portland Trailblazers. And if that were to go, that would be such a sad thing to happen. And I don't know, man. When I saw the Dallas Mavericks trade Luka Doncic, I'm just sitting there being like, that feels like to me a new owner that just doesn't get it. Like that does not get it, what that guy meant to that franchise. And you saw the picketing and the riots, not the riots, the protests that happened outside of the building. Because I think new owners, they just sometimes they don't, maybe it takes some time for them to understand like the dynamics at play, and fans are hard to win over, and it's hard to keep them. And so I just hope that for the Blazers fans that they will have something to root for next season and beyond, because that just seems like to me playing with that fandom it's a dicey game. And I hope that, you know, this whole Seattle Vegas expansion, Adam Silver said at his press conference, like if things got off track. As far as like Adam Silver press conferences go, that's pretty alarming language for the commissioner of the NBA to say things got off track. And I hope certainly they get back on track and then everything resolves itself. But man, this is painful. And as someone who worked with a lot of great people over there, a lot of great human beings that are having their lives kind of pulled around during this transition here, at least this negotiation, I just think things resolve itself because it's a great organization, a great team, a great fan base, a great city. And it would be a colossal disaster for the NBA if they were pulled out of Portland just years after they pulled out of Seattle. And I just hope it doesn't come to that.
I hope not to, Tom. I hope not to. Blazers fans are great. And it's the best show there in Portland. And I hope they stay in Portland. Tom, I hope you land with another team this coming season, because I enjoy talking to you on Thursdays, but I also enjoy seeing your face popping around on League Pass as well with all your insights. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Have a good day. And any weekend plans you got going on?
We just got back from seeing my family. So we're going to kind of settle down here in Charlotte. Had a great weekend in Connecticut. Great week spending time with my dad and my family. And so we're done traveling for a little bit. So good to kind of sweat it out here in Charlotte. And maybe I'll try to sneak out and see the Odyssey. You gave me a recommendation, like not the strongest endorsement, maybe a tepid endorsement, but I think you were pleased that you went and spent 3 hours going to see the Odyssey.
Very happy I did. Aquaman and YouTube, by the way, Regulators 8680 said, love the Muggsies and LJ pick in the background, Tom. Go Hornets. That's what Regulator said in the background. I love it too. The background looks just so sharp. Can we go full to Tom real quick? Just look at his background.
Don't do this.
It just looks so sharp. It's just such a nice background. You got to move the Emmy a little bit and more into picture, though. You can't have that hidden right behind you. Dude, you're so humble, Tom. You're so humble.
How's this? Right here?
That's perfect.
You like it right here? Is this good?
That's great. Yeah, perfect. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Just like that. Well, that's all for today's show. Tom Abershaw, thank you for joining me. Thank you to Emmy for producing, not that Emmy, our Emmy, for producing today's show. We'll be back again on Monday or sooner if LeBron decides. We'll go live whenever it happens. Tom, have a good weekend, man. Talk to you later. Have a good weekend, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kev. See ya.